Hello, Sagittarius, and welcome back to part three of your 2015-16 birthday reading. I'm here with some astrology afterthoughts and your tarot reading. Astrology afterthoughts, as promised, focused on the theme of relationships. Here's what I see. I've got two main data sources on this. The first one is I'm looking at the seventh house for the chart that I'm using as your solar return. That's the new moon chart. And the seventh house for Sagittarius is Gemini. Now, this is an interesting placement. It has some distinct advantages and some distinct disadvantages. The advantages are that it is pretty easy for you to find people that you can talk to and listen to. The presence of Gemini on your seventh means that you need your relationships to be conversant. Conversational. That's the sign that somebody is with it, and it's less likely, though anything is possible, pardon me, my voice is just waking up, that someone will be attractive to you if you find you can't communicate with them. And this has to be an easy communication. It has to be kind of a light and breezy mode of conversation. And it's an easy way to go around and sniff the world and find out who's who and what's what and get a clue. Now, the challenge with Mercury on the seventh house is that the ruling planet of your relationships is Mercury. The way that I stretch that logic is seventh is the house of relationships, and there's a planet associated with the sign you have there. That sign is Gemini. The planet is Mercury, and so the typical behavior of Mercury is likely to be the descriptive of the pattern in your relationship. And the typical behavior of Mercury is a lot of start and stop, reversal, retracing ground, tends to retrace ground a lot. A Mercury retrograde involves tracing over the same ground three times, because Mercury goes out to a certain point, stops there, goes back to a certain point, and then recrosses that territory. And so each time there's a Mercury retrograde, Mercury crosses over the same territory a total of three times, two times in direct motion and one time in retrograde motion. And so what this may have is a kind of a pattern in your relationships where you seem to go over the same territory a lot of times. Now, the way that you can work with that is, first of all, to know that that's the pattern. If you know that that's either the actual pattern or an important part of the pattern, you can work with it. And it's kind of like being a musician where you might have to play the same song three nights a week and you make it a little bit different every time. What you want to be looking for are differences in the landscape and guide the conversation toward, you might say, a future-oriented or evolutionary path. And when there's a conversation of the past, know that there's a conversation of the past. I think that being mindful of and being able to talk about the past, especially for your partners, is important. And set aside time for that. Let that happen. Also, be sensitive to when Mercury is stationing retrograde and work with those time phases. They're the times, particularly around the time of the station retrograde and the station direct, are likely to be the times when there are the kind of pivotal moments. And so it might be best to avoid making big plans around those things. Certainly don't plan to get married when Mercury is about to station either direct or retrograde, and, ride with that unusual psychic tide of Mercury retrograde, the electric tide, as I have called it previously. Now, that's some background. That is the, you might say, the pre-existing setup of your chart is to have Mercury on the 7th and to be in that kind of highly mental, mercurial environment. Now, what's in Mercury right now, the thing that shows up is a conjunction One is of an asteroid, Psyche, and the other is a trans-Neptunian object, that is to say, a planet around our orbiting our sun with an orbit slightly past that of Neptune. It's actually slightly past that of Pluto. The planet's called Chaos. So it's Psyche conjunct Chaos. Chaos is a slow mover. Psyche is a fast mover. They're telling a story right now. And here is the story that I see them telling. Psyche is about an injury. It's a spiritual injury, and it involves the loss of faith. And everyone has a place in their chart where Psyche describes a kind of a loss of faith. People pick up and possess many injuries in their lives. And sometimes there is a central, what I will call central delusion. That's a term from homeopathy. And it is the place where someone feels that they are hurt the most seriously. And this might be an abandonment wound. It might be being convinced that someone is unworthy of someone's love. It may be the sensation that one is ill-equipped for relationships because they are so either unstable or so persistently creative. There's a lot of possibilities. But the thing to look for and to understand and to have some empathy for is, what is someone's main loss of faith? Where's the place where they're certain that life is not going to deliver for them? And some people have a good few of these, but usually it comes back to something around which all the others kind of orbit and hover. And so this calls upon you to use your gift of insight and to slow down the movie a little bit, which Saturn will be helping you do, and get some understanding into where people are coming from. This is not so much about making up psychological theories about people, which I'm aware that lots and lots and lots of people do. This is about listening to the person in your life and listening with the intent of gently allowing your understanding to grow. Listen to the implications of the events of their life. Often we know the bits of history, or sometimes we know the bits of history, and we might have a kind of a cliche image of what that means, or we might just say, oh, that's the past, when in reality, often this central theme, central delusion, central injury, loss of faith, is right with the person all the time, and in some ways, you know, wagging the whole dog. And as you figure out what this is, and I would really counsel gentleness here, but as you figure out what this is, you can be pretty sure that it's a place to not tread on heavily. If the person was abandoned by their father and has obviously has an abandonment wound and can't imagine that men would ever trust them, the thing to do is not to convince them to trust you, but rather to be trustworthy. With men, there's often a kind of a gender wound. We are now living through a time when the men who grew up under the kind of peak of feminism in the 60s, 70s, and such are adults. This has been going on for a while, actually, and has not been, you know, commented on much. But a lot of men have an injury around being male, that some major element of their maleness was denied to them, or they were told that it was bad. They were, you know, essentially blocked. And this creates a space where it is neither safe to be fully male nor safe to encounter their feminine side. And so the thing to do is to look for the places where they feel like they have some strength. Look for the places where they do make contact with whatever we might say their feminine side is, and look for places where they do make contact for what their masculine side is. Given that this is Mercury and Gemini that we're talking about, you're likely to be surprised. And so the thing to do in dealing with any Gemini, no matter how pigheaded they might be, you know, or for that matter, no matter how open-minded they might be, is for you to keep an open mind and to allow them to change, to allow them to maintain multiple opinions at the same time. And by the way, this is true whether or not these people are Geminis. They will still be coming into your life through the filter of Gemini in your chart, and you'll have a tendency to attract these mercurial types. And so it's important, for example, to let them hold conflicting opinions. It is great fun to be friends with a Gemini, and part of that fun, I have found, is suspending your judgment of what they believe in the conflicts in their belief system, and let them have the conflicts in their belief system and kind of watch them work them out. It's an approach that requires some detachment. As a Sagittarius, you are capable of that, though you know, certainly have the ability to become profoundly attached and even sentimental, but you don't like to really show that too much, but it's really there in you, quite accessible. But mainly, you have the ability to give people space. It's nice because you need space yourself. All the facets of your Sagittarian personality describe a need for space, a need for some room around you, a need for some freedom, and to give people freedom. And the freedom that it's good to give people coming in through your Gemini filter is the freedom to contradict themselves, to change their minds a lot, to hold multiple opinions at the same time, and to remember that you can tune into their frequency by allowing the whole process of opinion to be a kind of a game. Now, for you, who's a Sagittarius, or rising, or moon, the idea of what you believe being a game is somewhat repugnant. You are someone who can have deeply held convictions. Part of the theme of Saturn in Sagittarius is what you do with your deeply held convictions. It's about how you process those deeply held convictions. And you're certainly going through a process of softening them. But nonetheless, as someone with profound commitment to what you hold true, it can be frustrating to encounter people who kind of play a game with their faith, play a game with their mind in terms of what they're actually committed to. And the presence of Psyche, especially conjunct Chaos, in your seventh house is indicating that there is some kind of a power source behind that. There is something that is responsible for this kind of illusion of division in their minds. And so what I would suggest is not boring right into that thing, but rather letting it be and dancing around the edges, not trying to prove any point, but rather demonstrate your ability to give people the space to exist. And if you can do that, you can have great fun with people. And especially if, as may be possible, you attract Gemini types, they're great fun because they're good at conversation and some of the hottest people in bed because they get the whole twin thing and like to play into that quality, right? So there can be some very powerful reflecting and mirroring that goes on in relationships with these mercurial types of people. Now, part two is the Mercury retrograde pattern. So before I checked out last night, I printed out all the charts for all the Mercury stations, retrograde and direct, going out into early 2017. And it turns out that with one brief exception, that is Mercury stationing retrograde in Aquarius on January 5th, 2016, all of the retrogrades going out into 2017 involve Mercury in an Earth sign. So it keeps happening over and over again, where Mercury does most of its upcoming retrograde in January in Capricorn, and then it does most of the next one, all of the next one, excuse me, in Taurus. That's the one in April and May. And then the one after that is in Virgo entirely. That's the one in late summer, Northern Hemisphere, late summer. And then in a year from now, on January 8th, 2017, there's another. Okay, so the one in late 17 takes place mostly in Capricorn, a little teeny bit in Sag. So Earth is the theme of Mercury retrograde. Mercury is going to spend a lot of time in Earth signs in 2016. It's going to spend probably half its time in Earth signs in 2016, maybe more than half its time. And so what that is suggesting is, in your relationships, guide things in the direction of Earth, that which is solid, that which is stable, based on comfort. Focus on good food. Keep the focus on home. There's no need to go out so much. I think we modern people could certainly use more time at home and more time taking care of ourselves and our loved ones at home. And so emphasizing Earth in your relationships, which is to say, things that are of the nature of what has lasting value, what provides nourishment and comfort, what has a sensation of quality, what is beautiful, what is enduring, what is outside, not in the sense of nightclubs, but in the sense of maybe forests and trees and places to visit, all of that is Earth-related. And so be generous in your relationships and, you know, don't worry about things being even Steven. Be happy that you're able to offer what you have to offer. And, you know, find out what your partner really likes to eat or love interest really likes to eat. Maybe could make some of it for them. And people do appreciate that. And if they don't, then, you know, find somebody who does. Okay, tarot cards. Let's see what we got going on here. Had to weed out my double deck of wandless tarot cards from a copy of the Crowley Tarot. They got kind of commingled. They're uncommingled now. So we've infused the Wandless Voyager Tarot with some of the spooky mojo of the Crowley deck, but not a lot. Just a little. It is the tarot. It has its own dose of spooky mojo all by itself. I always think of this deck as being Sagittarian in nature. It is called the Voyager deck, but it has a Taurus flavor too. Its writer, its author, its creator, Dr. Wandless, James Wandless, doctor of history and poli-sci from Columbia University back in the day, is a Taurus, a very nice chap who wanted to produce a tarot deck that was not carrying all the baggage of the past, kings and queens and courtly shit and knightly things. And this is a deck that has men, women, and children as its court cards, and where all of the imagery is snipped out of magazine ads. Okay, not editorial, according to James. I had dinner with him a couple of years ago, and he told me the story of his deck. And he cut all of the imagery out of magazine ads. Thousands and thousands of images in the 78 cards of this deck. No one complained. No one, not a single takedown notice. Of course, it's highly transformative work. And even the image on the back of the card was taken from a magazine ad. It's a slice of DNA, quite beautiful. And it is the only image in the entire deck for which he got permission to use, because it was going to be so prominently placed and standing alone, and the author of the image graciously granted him permission to put it on the back of a tarot deck, and that is how the Voyager tarot was born. I'm shuffling the deck as I talk to you, by the way, if you haven't figured that out. And I'm going to just take one quick look for any stray cards up on my tarot shelf. I'll be right back. Alrighty. No stray cards. Two decks. So the deck can speak loudly. If it wants, it can repeat a card. Sometimes that happens. Surprisingly, infrequently. Once I did three spreads with three different decks and got the same card as the 10th card every time. Had all three decks out. This is when I was first learning and watching these kind of astounding synchronicity patterns go by, and the odds against drawing 10 cards three different times and having the 10th card be the same card three times consecutively. It was a good day to go to Vegas and play blackjack. All right, and the spread I'm using is called the Celtic Wings. If you're been listening to these spreads for a while, you know a bit about that. The story of Celtic Wings spread is on the somewhat messy website that this reading is contained on. We do need to clean that up. I need to get collaborating with someone on that, but it's functional. It does deliver the content. And it's a spread that I invented when I was working for the Jackie Stallone Psychic Hotline, my first real professional job as a reader, answering calls all night long on what I came to think of as the National Mental Health Hotline. These people calling up in various shades of agony, and my job was to sit there and take their calls and read their cards for four whopping dollars a minute in the 90s, from which I got paid 35 cents. Okay. A minute. Okay, so here's some cards. Going to look at the fourth position first, and that's the position of what you want, and the card is love. So that's a good goal to have. Love in the Wandless Tarot is an interesting thing because he uses the Three of Cups to describe the card of love. Most decks use the Two of Cups for the card of love. The pretty little me and you, you and me, the kind of dominant image of that card, you can think of it as being that illusion where is the thing a vase or is it two people looking at each other? You know that one they showed you when you were a kid and you learned for the first time, saw the phenomenon of figure background contrast working? Well, Wandless uses the Three of Cups, and I think that's fascinating, and I think it's really interesting because so many relationships where there's two people tend to become relationships where there's three people. Even the ultimate relationship of two people, the ultimate monogamous relationship has a tendency to produce a baby, and then there's three people there. And so the thing about three is that, first of all, it's not the loneliest number after number one. That's two. And three is more stable. Three defines a plane of reality. Three is a much more complex interrelational pattern. And so the reminder here, and by the way, the Three of Cups in the Crowley Tarot and others is called abundance. The Three of Cups is called love in this case and in this deck, and I would propose here that there are always other extrinsic relationships to any relationship. I have an article called The One and the Many. I wonder if I have my collection of articles I've been thinking to put on your resources page, but that would be a good one. And it's an article about how in all relationships there is some interaction with the community. I'm just going to make a note to myself. That there is some interaction with the community, and relationships pretend that there is not. And it creates a lot of tension between two individuals to cut off the kind of potential field of the community that's around them. And so for a number of reasons, I think it's exciting that he's chosen three as the card of love. But it's saying, you know, you don't need to be so latched into the absolute kind of tyranny of monogamous thinking. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be loyalty. There's a clue in there in that, you know, as somebody with Gemini on your seventh house, you may have a tendency to love two people at the same time, and your partners may have a tendency to love somebody else too. And I think that we can be mature enough men and women that we give people some space to love, and that the mere mention of this not provoke nausea, which it seems to do in a lot of people. And if it does provoke nausea, that's something to check out and find out, what that's about. And I'm not saying run off and become polyamorous and go to the Groovy Kids Polyamory Conference in Michigan. What I am saying is that humans, if they love, they tend to just love. And if people are loyal, they're loyal, and there's not a conflict between being loving and being loyal. So, you know, give the world some flexibility, and give yourself some flexibility, give your partners some room to adapt, and, don't think that love means constricting and restricting all of your freedom. Now, this is contrasted by the first card that appears, and that's the devil. I'm not ever sure I've seen the devil in one of these spreads come up as the first card, but the devil is about materialization. It's the Capricorn card. It's not about Satan so much as it is about what you might think of as mundane reality. The reality of the world that we live in, which tends to be materializing. And so there's a need to be conscious of this materializing tendency in your life. The tendency to make things solid and to want to make things solid, and you seem to want to make things solid. So the question then is, what is the value of that thing made solid? What is the how much energy is there applied to that, and how much is in what you might think of as the kind of moving value of something, and how much is in the static value of something? In other words, do you have a guitar to play it, or do you have a guitar to have it? So if you're going to have a guitar, you might as well play it. And if you don't play it, you might as well give it to somebody who wants to play it and not be so attached. Okay, interesting theme developing here. Second card. I start with the fourth card, by the way. That was the Three of Cups. First card of the devil. Second card, the Lovers. Now, the devil is kind of a parody of the Lovers card. So the cards relate to one another, and you can pick up any Rider-Waite Tarot or Google any Rider-Waite Tarot, RIDERWAITE, and look up those two cards, the devil and the Lovers, and you'll see that the devil card is a spoof on the Lovers card. But we find the Lovers card is important in this spread because it represents the recent past, and that may represent a relationship that was, that might have been, or that in some way is still important to you, but it is showing up in the spread as a past influence, and the question is, what relationship is that, and what is the past influence? And it given the next card, the dullness inverted. Now, I know inversions, I don't use them all the time, but I do use them when I think that they belong there. This card came up inverted. It is dullness. And this looks like you're looking for something more, that you're looking for something that's not strictly based on attachment, but rather something that's based on adventure and excitement and movement. And that is fine. It would be, you know, helpful if you came to terms with this relationship, have the conversations you need to have with the person, and it clearly does not look like that relationship has to be over, but it has to find its appropriate place. It has to pass through this kind of materialism test of the devil. It has to establish itself as something that exists in the... What's a good word for this? In a sense, the non-physical. It has to go beyond the physical. It doesn't mean that physical is bad or a bad sign of anything. It doesn't mean if somebody wants to fuck you that they don't love you. This is a very common misperception, especially now that all sex is being conflated with rape. But the love piece is vital. It's and what is that? Well, it may not be a conventional form of the love thing. It may not be the permanent, perpetual devotion to you and me and you forever and ever, we'll wear our Mormon underwear and commit to being partners for all eternity, but rather what you spin in the moment, what you create in the moment, because that's really the only time that you can have love, and ultimately it's up to everyone to trust that someone is going to be there for us when we need them, and sometimes the people who we think are going to be there the most are not, and sometimes the ones that we had no idea even cared a little bit are there a heck of a lot. Next card. Harmony. Eight of Wands. This is the card of the green light. It's a bluish card. All the cards in this deck seem to have important use of the shade blue. This is a rather blue card in the traditional deck, the wider Rider-Waite deck, or the modern traditional deck anyway. And it's the card of forward movement, travel, transit, open pathways, open roads. James decorates the card with a bunch of musical instruments. There's nothing about this deck I don't love. There's a rainbow with a flute in front of it, and a lyre, and some kind of a... There's a harp and a trumpet and a... some kind of a dulcimer and a big treble clef and another harp and a violin and what looks like a clarinet with a... views of the sky harmony. All right. Card representing resistance. The Empress. Now, this card will have different meanings if you're male or female, or depending on your orientation. But if you are female, it is describing a resistance to being in charge of your own life. It's a resistance to wanting to be seen as too bossy. Now, as a Sag, you have that brilliant bossy streak, but this is a little bit different kind of bossy. It is about... centrality. It's about acknowledging that you are kind of a center point in the lives of people around you, and you need to be that. Especially you need to be that. And so I would suggest here the cards are saying, why resist that centrality? Why not be the center of your own life? And why try to substitute that centrality with a big bucket of glue when really what you're not looking for is glue, you're looking for being central? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch the positions. Remember, I'm doing this. It's not going to show up in the photo. I'm going to move the devil to the position of resistance, and I'm going to move the Empress to the center of the deck where she belongs. Center of the spread, rather, excuse me, where she belongs. And better to question or put the brakes on this need to be materialistic, and better to emphasize the need, your need to be central, remembering that, you know, you'll never quite be central in the way that your parents were to you. And a lot of what we do in relationships is we try to replicate the feeling that we had in loving our parents with absolute total devotion. And as John Lennon pointed out in an interview that I read some years ago, he said that the thing we're looking for in relationships is for our parents to love us the way that we love them. But that's not going to happen because we needed them more than they needed us. We're totally, completely dependent on our parents, and they are not completely dependent on us. In fact, they are aware that we're dependent on them, and many parents resent that. And so I think that what he meant by that is we need to be more realistic about being so dependent and expecting to be loved back in the way that we loved our parents or in the way that our children love us. Adult relationships require a lighter touch and giving one another more room to move and to breathe, to change and to grow. And fortunately, this is an inherent part of your nature. Okay, now there's two cards here that represent relationships. And what they are they're difficult cards in the context of a spread that's overall pretty positive. And the implication of these cards, one is the Nine of Crystals, one of the six is the Six of Cups. The Six of Cups inverted is like basically loss, and the Nine of Crystals inverted is narrowness. And this to me looks like you may be encountering people who are just not that happy with themselves. And it's vital, and this, by the way, may be a pickup on the psyche in the seventh house in Gemini thing that appears in your solar return solar chart. And the clue here is the being unhappy with oneself. And the thing that it's very important to remember is that you cannot make people be happy with themselves. You can't do that for them. Only someone can make themselves happy with themselves. And they really have to want it. And so that's the thing to not try to fix. And this may be the central delusion of that psyche conjunct chaos. And Gemini is unhappiness with oneself. And so there's a strong tendency that people have to want to fix others. And I suggest that you get over that and that you consciously keep your ears open for people who do like themselves and who do like their lives, or at least aspire to liking their lives. And that if you're finding yourself in a long-term relationship with someone who doesn't like themselves, notice that fact, observe that fact, and be realistic about dealing with it. Saturn in your sign is going to make you realistic about everything. And having counseled people for many years, particularly women, there is a tendency that I have seen more times than I can count of holding on to relationships just for the sake of holding on to relationships and to not having change and knowing this person is not the right person, but clinging to the relationship, whether it's over some issue of identity or whether it is over not feeling like, you know, you'll have a place in the world. And by identity, I mean not feeling like you're a whole person without a relationship. Very common feeling, and I think it's one of the most evil and insidious things that we've been taught to do, is to not feel like a person. And society just pretty much dumps that on us all the time. And so you are a whole person without a relationship, and if you feel like you're not, then that's the growth point. That's the place to stretch. Last card. Happiness. Nine of Cups. Fulfillment. The Wish card. Don't let others harsh your mellow. That's what that says. You have your priorities in order. You are on a path of love, harmony, belonging, mattering, and, you know, if you find yourself in relationship situations with people who just are not happy, give them a limited time to snap out of it, and then I would suggest moving on. Last card, the Hangman. That may not be so easy for you to do that. So, think it over. How much time do you have on this earth? How many opportunities to really live do you have on this earth? Not many people want to ask that question, because the answer is you don't really get that many opportunities to love and to live, and you don't really get that much time on this planet. And it is up to you to use your time well, to not waste your time, but to use your time creatively, lovingly, and constructively. So if you have to think about that for a while, you have to think about that and remember that you can't really fix someone. And it is this whole thing about hurting people is overrated. I think that the real injuries come from the betrayal of deception rather than from the seeming betrayal of honesty. All right. I leave you with that. I'm going to snap some pictures of this spread and put some music onto your recordings and send out a sample to all the other Saggies in the universe who have not heard this yet. Thank you for your business, and I look forward to seeing you in the next reading, which is coming up rather soon in what's called Vision Quest, and I'll have those written readings done by the end of December of 15. That's my plan anyway. I'm almost there. I'm going to reach the halfway mark on writing today, and then I'll be doing the audio readings during Mercury retrograde in January and have the audio and rune readings or artifact readings ready for you at the same time. So there'll be two stages of delivery of Vision Quest. Stage one is at the end of the year. It'll be the first time the readings are ever done by New Year's Eve. Kind of cool, huh? And then the audio presentations. It's going to be beautiful audio presentations. The music is great. I tend to attract Sagittarius guitar teachers. I have a fabulous guitar teacher who's now, over the years, become a musical collaborator, Daniel. They're going to get here in a few minutes, and we'll be recording some music for you. All right. So, till then, till soon, any questions, any thoughts, email me, efc@ericfrancis.com, and I will catch you in a different time and place. Happy birthday. Lots of love, and bye for now. Thank you.